Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, King Julian. We got a very exciting episode here. Today we are joined by Brad and Maxwell Ogden. How you doing, guys?
Not bad. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Great to have you guys here today. Before we get started, the number to the show today is 646-716-5733. Once again, 646-716-5733. The email to the show is kingjulian21@hotmail.com. If you would like to contact us, ask us any questions. Chat room is open today, so chat it up in there during the live show. And you can put in hashtag SportsKingdomLive on Twitter, as we are on the air right now. And we are ready to get started here, so... First off, the Washington Redskins. The Washington Redskins this past Sunday won against the Cleveland Browns without RG3. The Redskins currently have the lead in the NFC East, and it's been since 1999 they won the division. The Redskins, the next 2 weeks, play the Philadelphia Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys. Now, I got to ask you, starting off with our NFC East blogger, Brad, Brad, do you think the Redskins can prevail and win their division for the first time since 1999?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that at this point in time, they probably have to be considered a favorite. Of course, it's a bit, you know, concerning to say that when you have such an inexperienced roster. I mean, only two of these players on this team are left over from that 2005 team that came very close to winning the division and then ended up winning a playoff game as a wild card team. And obviously none of them are left over from the 99 team, not even Santana Moss or obviously London Fletcher, who was in St. Louis at that point in time. So, you know, really this is a team that's never really been here or done this before, and obviously they're down to their backup rookie quarterback right now. That might have only been a one-week thing, but even if they do get Robert Griffin the third back, you know, for this game against Philadelphia and the finale against Dallas, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty there. This team has dealt with a lot of injuries this year, obviously, you know, with Brian Arakpo and Adam Carricker and Brandon Merriweather, and now we're even seeing Tyler Palumbis and Will Montgomery and the offensive line get hurt last week. So a lot of injuries, a lot of youth, a lot of inexperience, and a lot of uncertainty, but regardless, they have the tiebreaker edge over the Giants, and if they beat Dallas, they'll automatically have the edge over the Cowboys, as well, regardless of what happens in week number 16. So, I mean, really at this point in time, I consider them the favorite. I think they're probably going to pull it off. I think they will beat Philadelphia this week. I don't think Mike Shanahan's team is going to slip up against a team like the Eagles at this point in time. And then I do think that they have the power to beat the Cowboys at home. I mean, they already beat Dallas in Dallas on Thanksgiving, nonetheless, when Dallas plays so well usually. So I think they should be able to beat the Cowboys week 17, finish the season on a 7-game winning streak, and walk into the playoffs as, like you said, the NFC East champs for the first time since, you know, since Robert Griffin III was 9 years old in 1999.
And how about you, Max?
I mean, the Redskins, the key to the Washington Redskins is that they have great balance, offensively. I'm not sure that they will win the division. I do think that Dallas really has the path that really looks the most manageable. They're playing a team like New Orleans that really isn't doing that well. And they do control their own fate against Washington. With that being said, we all know that the Giants are the best when their backs are against the wall, so who the heck is going to count them up? But going back to Washington, what I think is really interesting about them is that they're doing all of this, having all of this success, as the worst pass defense in the entire NFL. They rank 30th. They're allowing 285 yards per game. With that being said, even without Brian Arakpo and a slew of other injuries, they're 6th against the run. So to me, RG3 has been a phenomenal story. To me, he's already one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. You could even argue top 5 from a statistical standpoint. My only issue is how will Alfred Morris react to the pressure at hand? You know, it's a lot easier to come up as the underdog than it is to work with the target on your back. When you're the team who's won 5 games in a row, when you're the team who's at the top of the division, how do you handle that pressure? It's almost like in college football. We all know if there's 2 weeks left in the season and the team that's ranked number one isn't supposed to be ranked number one, we all know they're going to lose. And my question is, will Alfred Morris be able to carry the load like he has been? Because Kirk Cousins was phenomenal last week. RG3 has been great all season. But Alfred Morris has run for 1,300 yards and 9 touchdowns. Like, we can't sell that guy short, and we also can't sell the run defense short. My question is, can they react to the pressure in the proper way?
How about you take that one, Brad?
Can they react to the pressure? Sorry, what was the last part you said there?
I'm just not sure. I mean, this is a very young – I mean, they obviously have veterans London Fletcher and Santana Moss, but offensively speaking specifically, you're looking at a rookie quarterback, rookie running back, regardless of who starts this week. Can they handle the target being put on their head? I mean, they're no longer the team that is coming to get you. They're the team that everybody's coming to get.
Yeah, I do agree with you, and that's what I've I was sort of alluding to a bit in my first part, too, is that, I think that they are a team that we just don't know how they're going to deal with it. The good news is we've seen them deal pretty well when they've had nothing to lose, obviously, because they came out of the bye week, in a situation where really they didn't have anything to lose. Mike Shanahan had said in a press conference, had implied almost that the season was over. They're thinking about next year. He took those comments back a little bit and said that wasn't the purpose of what he was trying to say. But regardless, at that point in time, they were 3-6. They were 3 games out of first place in the NFC East with only, 7 games to go. So they really weren't in a position where they had much to lose. They were young, they were banged up, and no one expected them to do anything better than, another 5 or 6 win season like they've had the last 2 seasons anyway. And then, of course, with no expectations and no one expecting them to do anything, they started, winning. They won 5 games in a row, as we've said. So now, the shoe's on the other foot, so to speak, where they're expected to keep winning now, and suddenly there's a bit of an onus on them, which they never had before, this team, where we know, they're now the favorites, essentially, to win this division. They have, like I said, that tiebreaker over top of the Giants clinched as long as they win one more of these final 2 games. If that game is against Dallas, they'll have that tiebreaker clinched as well. So really, I mean, they should, if things continue on the current trend where the Giants have lost 4-6 and Dallas is so banged up that it's hard to see them continue on this pace, then Washington should be that team. And I think that that's a little bit scary when you consider, like you mentioned, a rookie running back, a rookie quarterback, question mark at right tackle on offense. Essentially, a rookie is your starting tight end in Logan Paulson. And obviously, some question marks on defense. The secondary, like you mentioned, is near the bottom of the league against the pass. They've masked that as best they could with Jim Haslett making some great halftime adjustments in the last few weeks so that pass rush has really been getting pretty decent pressure despite the fact that Ryan Kerrigan isn't himself and Brian Arakpo and Adam Carricker are on the injured reserve. And so can they continue to do that in these final 2 weeks now that defenses and offenses are preparing for these young guys and for these unknowns like Rob Jackson and Tyler Palumbus and whoever's at right tackle and Lorenzo Alexander, and, you know, just other guys who are kind of stepping up in different spots right now. So we'll see if they can do that or not. I know you'd be crazy to predict that they can, because we've never seen it, and like you mentioned too, that we'd be crazy to predict that the Giants can't, because we've continually seen them kind of defy the odds in December and January when their backs have been against the wall. So that's what's so exciting about this division right now, with three teams at 8-6. And, you know, it's funny, we're not even, you know, talking about the Cowboys, but they've won four of their last five as well right now. So it's really, or maybe even five out of six, four or five or five out of six. So it's really quite a race.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, well, you're right about that. It's probably the best NFC East race we've seen in probably half a decade, because the NFC East is easily it's the only division in the NFL that every year we enter with the expectation that the best teams reside in it, and every year we're talking about 9-7 winners. So I'm happy that we might not see that. Hopefully we don't.
Yes, indeed. I heard what Brad said. If they can continue on this trend they're having right now, the Redskins, then I guarantee you they will probably land with the spot. But you never know what can happen with the Giants and Eli Manning. You know, they always come up with impromptu moments where they can just capitalize and make the playoffs or win a game. It's just everything last minute for them. I mean, do you think the Giants can actually win this division over the Redskins that we've been talking about?
I mean, in my opinion, you know, I wouldn't rule out the Giants finishing. I do think they're going to finish 2-0 at this point. I mean, I think the Ravens are in worse shape than they are, basically, the way Baltimore is playing. And I really don't see Tom Coughlin's team losing back-to-back road games in December like that. I think that, if anything, that 34-0 loss to Atlanta, as embarrassing as it was, you know, their worst shutout loss in almost pretty much in franchise history, I think that's the kind of thing that Coughlin will have his guys bouncing back hard from. It's the epitome of adversity late in the season. And I think that Baltimore is a perfect opportunity for them to prove that they can beat another tough team on the road and bounce back. And then, of course, they finish against Philadelphia. And that's not a very large challenge at this point in time. You know, the Eagles have only won one game since the month of September, so it really shouldn't be too much of an issue for them to win that at home, especially on December 30th. So, you know, I think they should finish 2-0. The question then, of course, is can either Dallas or Washington finish 2-0 to match them and trump them with that tiebreaker and win the division at this point in time? You know, I think that Washington's a favorite this week. Dallas and New Orleans is a bit of a toss-up. And then, you know, if they do both win, then obviously the Giants automatically can't win the division on that final week, because then obviously they have Washington and Dallas facing each other. So that'll make it very difficult. But if New Orleans beats Dallas, then Dallas beats Washington in week 17, and then if the Giants can go 2-0, they win it. It's not that tricky, so wouldn't rule them out for that, but of course they can still get the wild card either way, and they're not eliminated no matter what happens to them in week 16 against Baltimore. So I think the Giants end up back in the playoffs in one way or the other. I'm thinking Washington for the division, Giants for that number 6 seed, and then a potential San Francisco or Green Bay versus Giants matchup on wild card weekend, while the Redskins probably host Seattle. But of course, things could change quite a lot between now and December 30th.
I mean, I'd agree with you that the Giants are in a great position, but let's not sell. I mean, back-to-back home losses for New York, obviously that's hard to imagine, but can we really imagine four straight losses for Baltimore? I don't think this is going to be an easy win for New York. I think that this is going to be the toughest game they play all year. And historically speaking, the Giants play very poorly against the AFC North. They're only 1-2 this year against the AFC North. They got blown out by the Cincinnati Bengals. They lost to Pittsburgh in probably Eli's worst career game. To me, Baltimore is just as much in line to come back and smack them in the mouth and pull out a blowout. I mean, we've heard all these questions about Flacco. Flacco had the same problem proving that he was elite as Eli Manning. I mean, is there a better stage for him to step up and say, hey, I told you so, than to beat Eli Manning himself? With that being said, I do expect Eli and the Giants to win. But at the same time, this isn't – I mean, they're home against Philadelphia to close out the season. That seems like an easy win. But let's not forget that they only beat Philadelphia by 2 points at the beginning of the season. And I know that this is a different team, but to me this is a much more confident team. You look at the 34-13 loss to the Bengals. Everything came unraveled last week in the second half. But the first half, they played the Bengals very well, and the Bengals are in position to win the division right now if they win and Baltimore loses.
Yeah, and I'll mention too. I mean, you mentioned the Philadelphia game. The Eagles actually won that game by 2 points. I know it's been a while, but they actually won that game. So the Eagles have beaten the Giants this season already at this point in time. So that's absolutely something that that the Giants have to be leery of, as well as the fact. I mean, you alluded to the fact that the backs against the wall mentality, and I've heard from so many Giants fans this week and over the last few weeks. You know, don't worry, don't panic. This is just what we all want you guys to think about us. That you know, we're in trouble. We always react the same way. And I keep hearing we always react. No, well, you don't always react the same way. I mean, yes, they have won 2 Super Bowls in 5 years in situations in which they were not supposed to win the Super Bowl, where they struggled late in seasons and won 10 or fewer games. That's impressive. But it should be kept in mind, and it's very easily forgotten by a lot of Giants fans, that in 2008, they started, I believe, 11-1 after that Super Bowl season, then were 1-done in the playoffs. So they collapsed late that season. The following season, in 2009, they started 5-0 and didn't even make the playoffs. So this is a team that's also had their struggles late in season, so it's actually very tough to tell if this is one of those seasons or one of those Super Bowl seasons. And realistically, if you're an odds man, if you're going with the numbers, the odds are in favor of it being 2008 or 2009 and not 2007 or 2011, because teams just don't repeat in this league nowadays. It hasn't happened in a decade. So really, I mean, yes, there are 2 different ways of looking at it. It's scary to bet against the Giants, but at the same time, this is not a team that is immune to collapsing.
Yeah, just hold you guys off there for a sec, but our co-host Sean has just joined us. So Sean, how's it going?
All right.
Yeah, we were just talking about the Washington Redskins, so let's hear what you have to say on whether or not you think they can possibly win the division.
I do believe that they are going to win the division. I just think the Giants, as the guys were just saying when I called in, that they are in the midst of one of their collapses, I think. And you have to wonder if this collapse will indeed cost Tom Coughlin his job if it does end up coming to fruition, where the Giants miss the playoffs by not winning the NFC East. So I am led to believe that, based on what I've seen, if RG3 is able to come back before the season's out, which he might even this week, in either of the last 2 games, but I think that that this is the Redskins surged late. The Giants have been caught, and I don't think the Giants are going to have enough this time to hold on and win the division. I think it's the Redskins' division, even though Dallas is right there as well. But I think the Redskins will handle the Cowboys and when they play them, and well, actually, the Redskins have the Eagles actually this week, so the Eagles get a chance to play spoiler this year. But I do think that the Redskins somehow, when the dust settles in 2 weeks at the end of the regular season, I see the Redskins winning the NFC East.
Yeah, the Redskins got easiest schedule ahead. I would love to discuss even more about the Redskins, but I feel we have to move on now. So, we are about to talk about the NFL Comeback Player of the Year. 2 players in the likes of Peyton Manning and Adrian Peterson have been highly speculated to be the front runners for the NFL Comeback Player of the Year. Adrian Peterson last year tore his ACL and MCL, while Manning sat a whole entire year after serious neck surgery. Right now, Adrian Peterson, the Vikings, sit 8-6, and Peyton Manning, Broncos, sit 11-3 with a guaranteed spot right now in the playoffs. So, starting off with Max, is it Adrian Peterson or Peyton Manning?
I think it's interesting. My answer is probably going to be confusing, but I have Peyton Manning for MVP and Adrian Peterson for Comeback Player of the Year. I just think the fact that Adrian Peterson came back from a knee injury that severe so quickly is impressive in its own right. He could really be posting half the numbers that he's posting now, and he'd probably still be the front runner for this award. The fact of the matter is he's on par to get 2,000 yards during a season where some expected that he might not even play come week 1. I don't think there's any way around how incredible what he's done truly is. I mean, he's playing with really a rather overrated offensive line. They're also underrated at the same time, which is once again confusing. But he has an average offensive line at best. He's playing in a very tough division in terms of defensive lines, and he's tearing everyone up that he faces. I mean, we saw last week him just go off for yet another 80-yard run. It's just phenomenal. And what Peyton Manning has done, I think he's the MVP. I really do. I don't think anyone's had a more impressive impact on their team, more influential impact, excuse me, and been more valuable, which is the key to the award, than Peyton Manning. With that being said, who has had the most impressive comeback? I'd say AP, because I don't know why anyone thought Peyton Manning wouldn't come back like this.
How about you, Brad?
Yeah, you know, I understand the points. I think those are some good points, and I agree with Adrian Peterson, obviously, for comeback player of the year. I think at this point it's very hard for me to agree with anyone who doesn't think Adrian Peterson is the comeback player of the year. I think there'd be someone who is not understanding the immensity of that knee injury. That was suffered less than a year ago, even now. I mean, that was suffered, was it Boxing Day? I think it was, you know, around Christmas last year, week 16, I believe, of last season. So when you consider that, I mean, that's just unbelievable. He blew out his knee and within 8 months was on the football field. Like you mentioned, wasn't supposed to start the season. Not only started, but he may break Eric Dickerson's single season record for rushing yards in a season. He's probably going to hit 2,000 unless, you know, something really goes wrong in the next 2 weeks. Should definitely break that record if he continues on his current pace. Is really just running the ball like really almost no running back I've ever seen before. I mean, this is beyond what I saw with Chris Johnson 2 years ago with the Titans, and beyond really, you know, what I saw from anybody but really Dickerson and Barry Sanders, maybe Walter Payton. I mean, this is really solidifying him as a Hall of Fame running back, and to do that, you know, under the circumstances of having tore up his knee, you know, only 8 months prior to the beginning of this season. That's why, for me, I'll take it a step further. I think if Minnesota makes the playoffs, since you need to make the playoffs to win the MVP, he's my MVP. Regardless of if they make the playoffs, if he gets the 2,000 yards and then potentially even breaks that record, he has to be my offensive player of the year. And then on top of that, he's the comeback player of the year. I could see the guy winning all three awards, and if he gets the 2106 and breaks that record and gets the Vikings into the playoffs, despite the fact that Christian Ponder is their starting quarterback, and they've been missing Percy Harlan in the second half of the season, and there's a team that won, what, how many games last year? Three or four games last year? Considering all those circumstances, he's got to be all three of them for me. I think it's just one of the most phenomenal seasons I've ever seen from any player in the NFL.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate what AP's done, and I even more appreciate the fact that he's done it with a rookie quarterback who's really no threat through the air. With that being said, we're only, what, 2 years removed from the last time the Vikings were in the NFC Championship game. This team was never bad, okay? This team was never as poor as their record would suggest in recent seasons. The issue at hand is they just couldn't get anything going offensively. And, you know, we talk about AP having that huge injury. Let's not forget that all of last year he was battling minor injuries throughout the entirety of the season, and then it all just came down to him running in a game that meant absolutely nothing to the season, and he got injured. Now, with that being said, AP obviously deserves praise. He may even be the offensive player of the year. I just don't feel that anyone can – you can tell me whatever you want about the Broncos' defense. They've been sensational. But you can look back at what Champ Bailey said at the beginning of the year. The defense has an entirely different confidence solely based off of the fact that they know. When they look to the offensive side of the ball, they're looking at Peyton Manning, and they feel comfortable and confident that what they do is going to be aided by what he does. And he didn't say it directly, but he basically said we couldn't do that with Tim Tebow because we didn't know what he was going to do. He's not going to score until the fourth quarter, so if we're not within a touchdown, the game's over. Peyton Manning brought this team back from, what, 24 points? I mean, Peyton Manning, to me, he's made these young receivers like Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas look like Pro Bowlers. He's made Willis McGahee look even better than he did last year, even if his statistics are down. He's made Knowshon Moreno even look good. I think Peyton Manning is... He remains the top quarterback in the NFL. If you want to talk about best and most skilled, that's fine, but Peyton Manning is the most unstoppable force in the NFL solely based off of the fact that you know what he's going to do, and as soon as you know it, he changes it at the friggin' line of scrimmage.
And he is. He is. He just is. You know, like you said, we could save that discussion for another day, but really I praise Adrian Peterson for much of what he's accomplished, but really, if you look down at Peyton Manning, he has truly been probably going to go down as one of the best quarterbacks ever to play in the NFL. So let's get to you, Sean, real fast. Do you think Adrian Peterson or Peyton Manning deserves the Comeback Player of the Year award?
They're both very deserving, as I'll say, but when you look at both cases and you put them side by side and push comes to shove, I got to agree with everyone else and say it's Adrian Peterson's award. But I will, and I agree with what Max and the other guy was saying, that I think that I will take this even one step further. If the Vikings are able to get in, I will say that not only will Adrian Peterson, could he win all three awards, but I will also say that he could also lend credence to the Vikings coach winning Coach of the Year, just because of the Vikings' turnaround from a season ago and for them to be in the playoffs with Christian Ponder, as was mentioned. So Leslie Frazier could be the Coach of the Year. I'll even take it a step further, along with his star running back, Adrian Peterson, winning the MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, and the Comeback Player of the Year. And even though, in the, as far as the MVP goes, I think it's going to be a three-horse race. Actually, I'll just throw this point real quickly in. I think it'll be between Brady, Manning, and Peterson. You can make a case for any one of the three. Or even Matt Ryan. I mean, look, or Schaub, you know, here's some other guys you got to take into consideration for the MVP based on teams' records. But I'll save that discussion for another day.
Yeah, I just want to ask Brad real quick. Brad, can you at all stay on for a little bit more, or is it time to go?
Yeah, I probably have to. I have another interview in about 5 minutes, but so I could probably stick on. It depends on how much time you need, but.
Oh, I mean, we you know, till you leave, we're gonna just move on from the NFL. So, I mean, the more you stick around, the more we can talk about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. If you want to go through another topic, I'm happy to discuss.
All right, shoot me out anything you got.
Well, you know, I mean, I did have, I was interested in that, in the debate generally that we're just having. And, you know, the whole, I know your focus was Comeback Player of the Year. I guess, you know, my final take would be essentially that I think that the difference for the MVP debate, and I don't want to shift it too much on you, but I think the difference for me is it's a really classic and almost cliched way of looking at it, but how much worse off would that team be without that quarterback? And, you know, the Broncos are a team that with Tim Tebow at quarterback, still got into the playoffs and won a playoff game last year, still has a very good defense. And the fact that Von Miller is a very high-end candidate for Defensive Player of the Year, I think really hurts Peyton Manning's case for MVP because of the fact that he's got way more support than he ever did in Indianapolis when he won those first four MVPs. So this defense is a lot better than it has been ever in Indy for him. The running game is obviously very good. Even, you know, in the wake of Willis McGahee's injury, Knowshon Moreno has done a very good job in that backfield. The line is pretty solid as well. So he's got a lot of support. I think Minnesota, you know, one of you guys mentioned that the Vikings were in the playoffs only 2 years ago, but you can, you know, the switch turns off pretty quickly sometimes for teams in this league, you know, going from good to bad. So I don't think the Vikings are bad, but I don't think they're very good right now, especially when you consider there's no Percy Harvin. And obviously, you know, the Brett Favre era ended and Christian Ponder took over at quarterback. So when you, all things considered, I think the Vikings are an average team that's been made, you know, to be a lot better than average and potentially even a playoff team. With Adrian Peterson really making the key difference. So I think that's my big difference. I think the Vikings would be, you know, probably mired in another three-win season, if not for Adrian Peterson. I think the Broncos are probably still a playoff team, even if you take Peyton Manning off that roster.
You know, the one thing I'll say to counter that is put the Minnesota Vikings in the AFC West, and their defense would flourish too. I mean,
that's a good point.
That's Champ Bailey has said so many times that, you know, it helps the defense so much, the fact that they're practicing against Peyton Manning as opposed to Tim Tebow. Now, the one thing I'll say about Tebow, maybe he's not the best quarterback, but he did lead the league in fourth quarter comeback, so it's not as if they didn't have any help. But, I mean, I agree with you. If AP makes, if AP can lead the Vikings to the playoffs, I'd be hard-pressed to argue. But if he doesn't make it, I mean, you know, the conversation is cut short there, regardless of that fact. He's had one of the greatest seasons in the history of football for any running back, any player for that matter.
Yeah, they've got to get in the playoffs now. I agree with that. I think one thing we can agree on is basically, I mean, poor Tom Brady, who's had a fantastic season as well, but I think it really is the year of AP and Peyton Manning. Which, you know, we talk about the NFL and it being cyclical and new guys emerging every single year, but this is just a throwback to the mid-2000s and late 2000s again, because we got, again, the best quarterback of this decade, of the last decade, and the best running back of the last decade, once again dominating, you know, the NFL world. It's kind of funny how that is, that these two guys continue to sort of emerge, and Brady too, but I think really, like we've all agreed here, Peyton and Adrian, really the stories of the year, both coming off of potentially career-ending injuries and having career years.
Yeah, what years they've had. And we'll wait and see what happens to the Redskins and those two individuals. Brad, I want to thank you for joining us, and it's a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks a lot, guys. Anytime. Have a good rest of the show.
Yep. Yeah, that was Brad. So, we just talked about the Redskins and the NFL Comeback Player of the Year. If you would like to we are in overtime right now, so in order to listen to the show, you must call into the show. Or, I was about to say, you can call in, ask us any questions you have. But as we move forward, we are going to discuss the Michigan Wolverines. So, the number two Michigan Wolverines have gone off to a fabulous start with an 11-0 record. Michigan has been very good so far, thanks to both Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway Jr., the son of Tim Hardaway Sr. This year, both Michigan and Indiana tried to bow out in the Big Ten Conference. So, first going with you, Sean, do you think Michigan can have a much better season than Indiana? And also, do you think they can sustain this success throughout the season?
Yes, just because of the two guys that you just mentioned, especially the one I really like is Tim Hardaway Jr. So, I do think that they can sustain it, and they will give Indiana a run for their money. I will be very interested once conference play starts. I'll be very intrigued to see that matchup twice between Michigan and Indiana. That should be one heck of a matchup, and wouldn't it be something that, even though I know Indiana just lost to Butler last week, it would be something that if by the time those two meet, wouldn't it be something if they could be one, if Indiana could get the number one ranking back and Michigan moves up to two, and we could have a 1-2 showdown possibly come conference play. So that'll be something to watch.
Yeah, it will.
It's going to be a memorable battle regardless of what their ranking is. But, I mean, obviously on February 2nd, Indiana plays host to Michigan, and then in the final game of the regular season on March 10th, Indiana travels to Michigan. Now, what I'll say about it is this. When we had Vin Parise on the show, I believe it was about a month ago, he and I both unanimously agreed Indiana is probably the most well-rounded team in the nation. Now, what I'll say about it is this. Butler isn't just Butler, wow, they pulled off an upset here. I mean, Butler's been doing this all season. This is probably their third upset of the year. What I'll say is I think Indiana losing this early is the best thing that could have possibly happened to them, because you have a coach like Tom Crean who is a complete perfectionist, and the thing that you have to know about Tom Crean is this. He will get the most out of every single player on the team. He will make them fight for every single possession on both ends of the floor. It's why they're the number one scoring offense in the nation and why they're one of the top defenses in the nation. The thing about Michigan that I think gives them the edge come the tournament, however, the NCAA tournament, is they have the star player. They have Trey Burke, who's averaging 18 points and 7 assists right now. They have their Kemba Walker, if you want to put it like that. But they also have so many sharpshooters. I mean, Nick Stauskas has probably been one of the top five freshmen in the nation. Glenn Robinson III is playing phenomenal, rebounding and scoring at a great pace. And you got guys like Mitch McGarry and Jordan Morgan who are just waiting to burst out. And obviously, as you said, Tim Hardaway. What I'll say is if Michigan gets into the tournament, which we all expect they will, I think Trey Burke is really going to be the guy. But I think Michigan is the type of team that if they get in with a number one seed, I expect this team to lose. I just don't know that they – I don't know if they can play with the expectations upon them while Indiana has already suffered that loss and has already been set back. I mean, they did beat North Michigan did beat North Carolina State when they were going for them. But to me, if Michigan loses soon – they're in great position, but if they lose late in the season and it rattles them, I'm not sure that they'll be able to make it out alive.
I could, Max, I'll just real quickly say, I think Michigan, I see your point with that, but I also think Michigan is very capable because of all the players you mentioned and what I said with Tim Hardaway. I think if Michigan stays healthy, I think they could be a very dangerous team. They could possibly make a run to the Final Four.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, Michigan, when we get into conference play, I mean, holy, wow, they have one of the toughest schedules in the nation. I mean, from January 13 onwards, you're looking at January 13th and 17th, back-to-back road games against Ohio State and Minnesota. It gets no easier. A few days later, they're playing at Illinois, then at Indiana, home for Ohio State, at Wisconsin, at Michigan State. I mean, you're looking at a team that can go from 11-0 right now to taking a steep tumble and having four, five, maybe six conference losses. But with that being said, this is Trey Burke's team. So they'll go as he goes. If he continues to shoot this well, and he's not just shooting well, he's shooting responsibly. He's only taking 12.9 shots per game, which you kind of would expect more from a guy because when you look at it, there's not much offensive balance in every single game, but he's shooting the ball very well. If he can continue to shoot like that, this team is going to be tough to stop because, I know that Michael Carter-Williams is grabbing all the headlines, but to me, Trey Burke is the best point guard in the nation, and I don't think it's close. Trey Burke, to me, is the Chris Paul of college basketball right now. He can score, he can rebound, he can obviously facilitate, and defense has improved marginally from a year ago. He's not turning the ball over. But, you know, again, the Big Ten schedule is a tough one, and not everyone can make it out alive. Indiana has gone through it, and they played really well last year. They're not number one for no reason. They played very well last year. But as I said, if Michigan takes an early loss, I think that's going to benefit them greatly. And they're going to be able to make it to the tournament with maybe a 2-3 seed and make a run for the title. But if they're a number one seed, I'm just not sure that they're the type of team that can handle that pressure.
Yeah, I don't know if they can handle the pressure, too. If you look at their schedule, it's been quite easy for them as of late. And, you know, looking down the other half of the schedule, they have a majority of Big Ten teams that they have to go up against. But, you know, getting back to Indiana, though, what a rivalry it's been between them and Butler. I mean, that has been just one incredible matchup over the past couple years now. And for Indiana to get upset, it was just, it was terrible for Indiana fans, but it was just shocking for fans around the world. But, yeah, you guys want to say anything further before we move on? I just want to say real fast, Trey Burke, like you said, has done phenomenal. He's been averaging 18 points per game with a field goal percentage of .535. So, I mean, he's doing phenomenal. So is Tim Hardaway Jr. They both combined for 52 points against West Virginia recently. So they are just doing phenomenal. And like Sean said, if Indiana can at least get back up there, and they're not too far from the number one spot. They're actually number six right now. then who knows? I mean, they got an incredible big guy in Cody Zeller, and you just never know what can happen between Michigan and Indiana, as it's going to be a battle down to the finish before we get to March Madness. But, before we move on real quick to the Golden State Warriors, you guys have anything else you would like to
say? The one thing I'll add is this. They're actually really, I mean, we talked about Michigan State, but to me there are three teams that could take Michigan and Indiana down and actually win the Big Ten, and that's Illinois, led by Brandon Paul, who might be the top superstar in college basketball. I mean, he has that mentality. He puts up the numbers. But also a team like Minnesota, I mean, we obviously know about Tubby Smith, but don't sleep on Ohio State. They're one of the best coach teams in the nation. They're not the most statistically impressive teams, but they have a lot. They have great balance interior and on the perimeter. I mean, they're shooting lights out from beyond the arc. They're shooting that. They're scoring a lot of their points on the interior, and they have another guy who's really just a star in the making, and that's Deshaun Thomas. So I'd say that Ohio State, I mean, they have a game on Saturday against Kansas where we're really going to learn a lot about the team, but they're even though they lost William Buford and Jared Sellinger, this team reloaded this year, and they're one of the most disciplined teams, so I'd watch out for them.
Yeah, Sean, you have anything else to say?
I can agree with what Max is saying, but I think, just to real quick make the point, I think at the end of it, I just think Michigan is my sleeper team, you know, right behind, you know, me being a North Carolina fan, but I think Michigan is going to end up winning the Big Ten. I really do.
Yeah, it's possible, but... Moving on now, the Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors have done terrific so far under second-year head coach Mark Jackson. Right now, they are 17-8. Mark Jackson says they are for real. So, starting off with you, Max, do you think the Golden State Warriors are for real, sitting fifth in the Western Conference?
I mean, it really depends on what we're talking about as for real, because if you're asking me if they're going to make the playoffs, I'll tell you the same thing I said at the beginning of the season. Yes, they are. The West is a weaker conference. The Warriors have a lot of youth. They have a lot of athleticism, and they acquired the veterans they needed to put it all together. They acquired Carl Landry, Jarrett Jack, Andrew Bogut, who, when he's healthy, is going to contribute. My issue with the Warriors is this. They are the most fragile team in the NBA. Bogut is again injured. Stephen Curry is always a threat to get injured. Even Carl Landry has a history of injuries. Mm-hmm. Jarrett Jack was hurt last season. Brandon Rush is out for the year. I just don't think that they can afford to get injured because they don't have the depth that people make them out to. If you're talking about this team in 5 years, they might be the best team in the Western Conference, maybe even 3 years. The issue is they rely so heavily on inexperienced players. Even Curry is not that experienced, but you look at guys like Harrison Barnes, who has been phenomenal. There's no doubt about that. And Festus Ezeli, who started 20 games at center. Even Draymond Green, who had the game winner a few nights ago, or the game ceiling block, excuse me. The issue for me with the Warriors is this. I believe that they can be a top six team, maybe even top five team in the Western Conference. But anyone who tells me that they're going to sustain a pace where they're winning twice as many games as they're losing, I'm not sure that that's the case. I expect the injury bug to hit them at some point. Obviously, we never hope for that to happen, but they are a great rebounding team. They move the ball well. Their defense has improved since last year, but again, they play in a very tough Pacific division. You know, the Clippers, in my opinion, even though they're only a game and a half behind the Clippers, I think the Clippers are leaps and bounds ahead of Golden State. And we all know that the Lakers at some point are going to turn around. So are they for real? Are they going to make the playoffs? I don't see any way they wouldn't. They've set out a pace. They have the balance along the perimeter and the interior. The question for me is, can they stay healthy? Because if they can't, they lose it all.
Yeah, and health is a big concern. Sorry, Sean, but we have to skip you here because we only have 1 minute left. I want to thank both of you guys for joining us, including Brad once again. He was just great, phenomenal. He just knows his stuff when it comes to NFC East. Join us this Saturday as we discuss the Big East, the AL East, and Manny Pacquiao. So it should be a good show. find us on iTunes for this episode, and I will talk to you guys Saturday. Peace out.
Peace out.